TED Audio Collective.
I'm Elise Hu. You're listening to TED Talks Daily. Today's show features the mayor of my home base of Los Angeles, Eric Garcetti. He is the head of C40 Cities, a network of the world's megacities tackling the climate crisis together. In his TED 2020 conversation with TED current affairs curator Whitney Pennington Rogers, Garcetti talks about climate action, but also his handling of the pandemic, how mask wearing got politicized in the U.S., and the ways these problems are all connected.
Welcome to the Canva guided meditation for stress at work. Impending deadline? Generate Canva presentations in seconds.
So fast.
Brainstorm got too big? Ooh. Summarize with AI in a click. Writer's block? Release with Canva Magic Write.
Magical.
Stress less and save time at canva.com. Designed for work.
This show is brought to you by Schwab. With Schwab investing themes, it's easy to invest in ideas you believe in, like electric vehicles, renewable energy, water sustainability, and more. Choose from over 40 themes. Buy as is or customize the stocks in a theme to fit your goals. Learn more at schwab.com/thematic investing. This message comes from Apple Card. Earn up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase every day, then grow it at 4.50% annual percentage yield when you open a savings account with Apple Card. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card subject to credit approval. Savings available to Apple Card owners subject to eligibility. Savings accounts provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, member FDIC. Terms apply.
Like TED Talks? You should check out the TED Radio Hour with NPR. Stay tuned after this talk to hear a sneak peek of this week's episode.
So great to have you here with us, Mayor Garcetti.
Thank you so much, Whitney. Great to be with you.
And so, let's just, dive right into it. You know, as the mayor of one of the largest cities in the world, you undoubtedly have a myriad of challenges and crises at any given moment that you're having to juggle. And by becoming the chair of C40 Cities, you've kind of put a stake in the ground and put a spotlight on climate. So why do you think it's really important for cities, yours and others, to really prioritize climate action right now?
Absolutely. So for the uninitiated, C40 is a network of mayors, founded by mayors a few years back, and now it's 96 of the most populous metro areas in the world that account for about a quarter of the world's GDP. So when you think about it, it's bigger than any country in terms of our GDP output. More people are moving to cities than ever before. A majority of humanity lives in the urban environment. But it's a very diverse set of cultures and geographies and languages with a common set of problems, which is that challenges, whether it's a pandemic or in this case, climate crisis, really doesn't care about borders. They don't care about national borders. They don't care about regional or state borders. So this network is about mayors, there's an old saying that good mayors borrow, great mayors steal. So the ideas around the world that we steal from one another about how to promote green jobs, more inclusive economy, wean ourselves off of fossil fuel, build a transportation future that's low emissions, create buildings that also help us reduce the heat that is enveloping the earth. This is really the call of our lifetimes. And while there's other crises we are navigating as well, before and after the pandemic, the climate crisis will be the defining crisis of our lives. And this decade must be a decade of action. I call it the climate decade, where it's too late to reverse things, but it may not be too late to actually implement policies that not only help save human life on this planet, but also make it more just, equitable, and fair for its inhabitants.
You've really championed this idea of this global Green New Deal, where you're putting climate at the center of all decisions that cities are making. Could you talk a little bit more about this vision and what that really looks like?
Yeah, I think, most human beings have, at least before the pandemic, had two main sources of stress. One is if you talk to a young person, they wonder, will the earth still be around as we know it? Obviously, the earth will survive, but will human life sustain as we know it? Second, if it does, where will I fit into the future economy? Everything is changing so rapidly. Automation, elimination of jobs, industries that are dying out that we thought would be with us forever. And so the Global Green New Deal is really about combining these two things, which is saying we have to solve one with the other. In fact, you can't solve one without the other. That if we just save the planet, but the disruption that could be caused by mass migration because of global warming, for instance, somehow gets mitigated. We save cities from being flooded and other extreme weather events. That doesn't mean that the social fabric will be strong if the poor are still very poor in cities and the most successful cities still, I mean, look in Los Angeles, we have one of the largest homeless populations in America, even though we have one of the strongest economies. And in other parts of the world, it's not just within cities, it's between countries still. And so if we don't have a just economy, the social fabric will tear apart as well, whether that's based on racial prejudice and racism that's historic, whether it's based on economic discrimination and caste systems, whether it's looking at the way that the economy is putting more and more wealth in the hands of fewer and fewer people. We really see an opportunity to bring these together because the big mega industries of tomorrow are green industries.
I mean, and you started to touch on this a little bit in thinking about your work in Los Angeles. What are some of the, I guess, specific ways that you've enacted some of this climate action?
So the main three things that are driving global warming are transportation, buildings, and of course, our electricity generation, energy. And so we have looked very aggressively at all three, whether it's looking at getting away from fossil fuels for the generation of our electricity. We'll be completely off of coal soon. And I move forward with closing down huge natural gas electricity plants, replacing them with solar. We have the biggest solar generation and storage facility in the country that is going to be built, Eland. It's actually cheaper than a new gas plant would be. So this is good economically, enough to power enough electricity for about 1 million people just in the desert above Los Angeles. So first is converting our energy sources. Second is transportation. We're going to move all of our buses to electric buses. We're buying many of them. We already have the largest electric bus purchases in the country for our metro system, which is Los Angeles County. But whether it's looking at electric vehicles, now a majority of the purchases we make for our city vehicles are electric as well. This isn't just good for global warming. It's also good for the air that we breathe and reducing smog, asthma, cancer. And then third, it's looking at the ways that we can make sure that buildings, which are really the biggest emitters of all, can become much greener. It's going in there, creating jobs where people go into homes and inspect people's homes and help them save money and also save the planet, as well as the big commercial buildings and looking at ways we can make those electric run and clean electricity from the first point. So those are three of the things, but we have a huge agenda. We have our own Green New Deal here in Los Angeles, and it looks at everything from shade. For instance, shade is an equity issue. If you look at black and brown communities in my city, they're the ones that are in the hottest areas of town with the fewest trees. And when you're waiting for a bus, if you're a senior or a student, that becomes something that when you get home, that student doesn't want to do homework. So you have to think about this environment, not just as the planet, but about the people on the planet and the way this affects our lives in terms of equity as well.
I mean, I guess I'm thinking about C40. And as you mentioned, you're working with 96 different cities around the world. And so I'm curious, through C40, sort of what inspiration you've drawn from other cities and what are some examples you can share of ways that other cities are sort of leading the charge on climate action?
It's humbling to be mayor because when you think you're doing the best, there's some mayor who's doing even better. So, for instance, with electric buses, Shenzhen, China converted the entire fleet. So we're talking about hundreds of buses now here. They have over 10,000 already done, checked off. They're the first big city in the world to do that. Or when I think in Africa, mayor of Freetown, and she is looking at ways that you can mitigate the flooding that's coming from the extreme weather, which she said, maybe we'll get to buildings and energy later. Right now, I've got to literally save people's lives from the flooding that's happening each year. Or when you look in a town like Medellin in Colombia, where you have an incredible mayor who's looking at ways right now to expand bicycles and public transportation. And during this COVID-19 pandemic, I think a lot of us are trying things we've never tried before. Just let everybody take over streets and put tables out there because that's safer for restaurants. But all of a sudden, you're more closely connected. Close down streets to cars and let people walk on the streets first so they don't contract COVID-19. But maybe after COVID-19, people say, maybe we don't need cars on as many streets as we do. So I think there's a lot of disruption that's happening, and some positive silver linings out of this pandemic is people are saying, I don't want to return back to the way things were. If that means pollution, traffic, if that means a warming earth, let's try things differently. And this showed us that we can do things collectively in a country and in a world right now.
Well, let's talk a little bit also about how the pandemic has affected your work with C40 and thinking about climate action. And you've established a task force to really place climate action at the center of recovery efforts. And so could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's been really exciting, Whitney. I have to say, one of the most moving days of my professional life was in the midst of the pandemic. Remember when it was starting to peak in northern Italy? And we said, as C40, we're probably the strongest network of mayors around any topic area in the world of the big cities. So let's see if we can get a Zoom call together across all these time zones. And whether it was the mayor of Melbourne, who was up, I think, at 1 a.m., myself up at like 7 a.m. or 8 a.m., or Europe, Latin America, Africa in between, we suddenly had all these mayors. I think about 48 of our 96 were on a call. It was straight out of like, you know, get me the mayors in a superhero movie. And then suddenly we had literally the mayor of London and the mayor of Delhi and the mayor of Seoul talking about how their early testing really bent that curve, how the mayor of Delhi said he locked down Delhi with a stay-at-home order. And I asked Mayor Sala of Milan if he would head a task force that would look at COVID-19 response and recovery for cities around the world. So we could convene that with representation from Africa, Latin America, Oceania, Asia, East Asia, and South and West Asia, and Europe, of course, and every part of the world, to write this kind of playbook of how do you respond, how do you rebuild, and then most importantly, how do you reimagine moving forward? Because to that point of not returning to the normal, not returning backwards, what can we do in this moment to, in the three concepts, have jobs and inclusivity, have resilience and equity, and then health and well-being guide everything that cities are doing? Because there's the temptation to just put a bunch of gas into buses again, open everything up, get factories that are dirty going. Instead of using this as a moment to build for the future and not just for a year or two recovery, but to be a strong economy for decades ahead. And so we are going to be putting this out and are releasing the midterm report of this task force, which will talk about those things from, you know, there shouldn't be any stimulus that's not a green stimulus, that this has to be inclusive of all people and look at the issue of equity, that it should champion mass transit, that we need to look at generating green energy and getting rid of fossil fuels in our buildings and in our cars and vehicles in all of our city streets, and that this has to be sustainable. This just can't be a recovery for this moment. I think these guideposts are so important for our climate crisis, but even if we didn't have a climate crisis, they'd be the smart way to recover, to build a strong economy and a fairer economy for everybody. So it kind of builds on this global Green New Deal, overlays this crisis, and inspires people to be bold. As the poet says, to make sure that our reach exceeds our grasp. You know, what we don't think we can hold, suddenly we can when we stretch just a little bit further.
And you mentioned earlier just racial inequity and sort of have talked about how that's been a big part of these plans and this thinking. And of course, you know, in the United States, we've been dealing with a huge outcry against systemic racism, especially now on the heels of several violent and deadly attacks against the Black community. And it's a movement that we've seen has really reverberated around the world. And so I'd love to hear from you just more specifically, I guess, how C40 is sort of centering this work and thinking about the intersection of social and racial equity and climate on the city level.
So I feel very blessed to be part of this network at this moment, which is both an American and a global moment when it comes to our unique history of racism in the United States, but the universal racism that we've seen around the world and the history of colonialism and caste systems and other things around the world, based sometimes on religion, oftentimes based on the construct of race, and certainly on geography. First, you always have to go internal. So we did that same thing that I think a lot of enterprises are doing. We have a very global staff to listen to the voices. For instance, I used to live in Africa. One of my priorities as chair was, this was before the pandemic, my first trip was going to be to visit our African members and to convene them. We'll do that as soon as I can get out of this COVID-19 moment. But African nations were saying for a long time, we are so proud to be a part of this, but suddenly we're being told by the rest of the world that we have to reduce our emissions when we are barely responsible for any of the world's emissions and we still need to develop as countries. Mm-hmm. So what assistance can you give us right now to mitigate climate crisis? Because as we saw, you know, in Mozambique, for instance, the huge floods, those weren't caused by emissions coming out of Mozambique. Those were emissions coming out of China and Europe and North America primarily that warm the earth, cause extreme weather. And then the victims are in countries like in Africa and other places where the infrastructure isn't as strong. So I think if you look at climate in terms of the racial inequities globally, you begin to understand you have to place leadership, Black leadership, whether that's global Black leadership or domestic Black leadership, squarely at the center of what we're doing. And I think that's a wonderful thing about this. We have vice chairs. We have quotas for every region. We make sure that there are women and men on here, because if you're not intentional about gender or racial equity, it just will not come. Secondly, then we're looking at what we can do in terms of standing up for this moment and saying when you rebuild, if you're not rebuilding your economies in a green and racially inclusive way, you're going to leave many people on the sidelines. Human suffering will continue, but more importantly, you're going to lead economic prosperity on the sidelines. Think about that in America. When we look at the idea, for instance, of reparations, the estimates of how much it would boost our GDP just to erase the wealth gap between Black and white Americans, why wouldn't we do it? Why wouldn't we add that to our economy when everybody would prosper from that? Globally, it's the same thing. And I hope that we can build a global system, potentially with new leadership in the White House, which I'm very optimistic about, of re-engaging with the world and America paying its piece, as well as Europe and other places, into a global funds that can help poorer nations who are often Blacker and browner around the world to be able to have the tools to build green economies of tomorrow and not suddenly inherit all of our fuel trucks when we convert them all to electric or suddenly have coal plants that are being built or ecological devastation with dams, as we see happening right now. Those things, I think, are critical if we're going to put our money where our mouth is about fighting against racism, not just in our own communities, but really around the world and eradicating it once and for all.
Hmm. That's so important to hear and great to hear that that's been a conversation that's been had in C40 and around the world. But I just have sort of one last question for you, which is you focus so much on cities as a mayor and also as the chair of C40. But you mentioned the election in the United States, and there's so much more that's needed from federal governments and from nations. And so what do cities need from their governments, and how can individuals also take part in bringing about some of this change?
I think we have to remind all governments, and there's a conversation I have with mayors around the world, but I'll just focus on my own country, that nations are not made up of their nation's capital telling the rest of the country what to do. Here in America, we have 19,000 local communities that are the nation. When Barack Obama was president, we would get calls from the White House all the time saying, we want to do something on policing and racial justice, or we want to do something on housing and economic opportunity. What's going on in Los Angeles or in other cities? And they would listen and let those things bubble up to the nation's capital rather than somebody sitting removed from communities in a bubble saying, this is my philosophy and this is what the nation's going to do. I think when it comes to climate change, for instance, I told people, even though we had President Trump threaten to withdraw from the Paris Climate Accords, which we haven't done yet, we can still stop that in this election because it doesn't happen until just after. We suddenly got on the phone and got over 150, now over 400 cities in America to pledge to do the Paris Climate Accords on our own, Democrats and Republicans. And I reminded people, even if Hillary Clinton had been president, we still would have had to do that work locally. So I think it's just reminding people that we live where we live. Local communities are really what we're connected to. It's where 90% of the change happens. Most of our budgets are spent. The things that affect our lives, from schools to the streets that we walk on and bike on and drive on, those are where we are in cities. And so if you change your city, you're changing the world. And if you demand that your city network with other cities to do it together like we do in C40, there is great hope and help for humanity.
Wow. All right. Well, if you change your city, you change the world. I think that's a great way to sort of leave this conversation. Thank you so much, Mayor Garcetti, for joining us today and for your thoughts on all of this.
Thanks so much, Whitney. Appreciate it.
20 years ago, Jimmy Wales founded Wikipedia as a place for everyone to share information. But he wasn't exactly sure how to run the site.
How do you put together a system that will generate a reasonable degree of quality and, you know, be open?
Ideas about building communities, online and off. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR. Subscribe or listen to the TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.